Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. You can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is Michael J. Pope Jr., and he's the owner of Michael Pope Training. I've had conversations with speakers before, but I really like to ask more questions about actually becoming a speaker. Questions like, how do you get speaking engagements? How do you figure out pricing? What do you need to have in place to even be a speaker? So I have a bunch of questions, so let's try to get some answers. Welcome to Teach the Geek Interviews, Michael.
Thank you, Neil. I'm excited about being here. As a fellow geek myself, IT professional, happy to be here, man.
Wonderful. Yes, thank you. So for the first question, when it comes to the speaking that you do, what is your speaking topic and how did you come to it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm passionate about speaking in a few different areas. So MPT. So, and a lot of times the M is for marketing. So I speak on marketing. I speak on personal development. And I also speak on technology. I have an IT background. And so those are my sweet spot areas.
Okay, cool. And then, I mean, when it comes to being a speaker, people may come to that decision at some point and think, you know what, I'm pretty good at speaking. I have a passion for a certain topic. I really want to get it out there. So for someone who has made that decision to become a speaker, what would they need to have in place for them to actually say that I am a speaker?
Yeah, absolutely. One, I say you need to have proof. So speakers speak. So it's important that you can point people to something saying, hey, I spoke here, I spoke there, I spoke there. And it doesn't matter whether you spoke for free or for fee at those places. You just need to have that social proof that you can do what you say you want to do.
Yeah. That is so true. There are so many things right now that are really popular. Like burnout is one big one. And then even, mm-hmm. You know, DEI is another big one. And I often wonder, what kind of background do these people have to even speak on this topic? What credibility do they have? Or are they just jumping on a bandwagon because burnout is all the rage right now?
Yeah. And you find that a lot of people are just, like you said, jumping on the bandwagon. That we've seen that with AI, right? People who, I mean, I'm an IT professional, so it makes sense for me to talk about AI. But there's people who maybe they watched a video, read a book, and they're like, hey, I'm a ChatGPT expert now. I'm going to speak on it because it's a buzzword. And so that happens a whole lot. I think what gives you credibility is when you have stories that can back it up. Stories and examples of how you're implementing or how you're using it or how you dealt with burnout personally.
Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, the reason I even started Teach the Geek had to do with my own struggles working as an engineer and having to give presentations in front of management and not being all that great at it, but getting better at it over time because I saw the benefit of doing so. And now I basically help people like me. So that's kind of how I came to it. So now, you know, you're a speaker, you know, you have Michael Pope Training. How do you go about selling yourself as a speaker?
Yeah, for me, I believe that as a speaker, the best way to really advertise or market yourself as a speaker is to speak. So one of the things I love doing, Neil, is I reach out to different organizations, different groups, and I'll offer to give them a free lunch and learn or free training. So that way they can see, you know, what I do as a speaker. I'll go in there and take a topic, maybe deliver a 20-minute talk or a 40-minute talk to this organization. And I ask for time with the person in charge of bringing in speakers. And I'll say, hey, and I always get feedback. So if I'm giving a speech, I use a program called Talkadot to get testimonials from the audience. That works great. And I can show it with the person and say, hey, based on the results of my speaking, here's what your participants thought about my speak. They found it valuable. They want to hear me speak again. Here's what else I can speak on for this fee. And I'll submit a proposal. So I think it's important to always be ready because if someone asks me today, hey, can you give me a proposal for XYZ? I should be able to quickly turn that around. Yeah, I actually had that happen recently, Neil. I had someone send me a request for a proposal and we met on Zoom, talked about it. I sent them in a proposal back that same day, and they were very impressed with how quickly I gave it to them, how detailed it was, and they offered me the opportunity.
Okay. So when it comes to the proposals that you give to potential clients, is that something that you typically get on a Zoom call to discuss, or do you they ask for a proposal and you just send it?
Yeah, so normally we'll have a discussion first. Yeah, because you want to have an understanding of what's the goals. So if it's an event plan, what is the goals for that event, right? What are they looking to accomplish? And I always ask them, I love asking, hey, what does either success look like for you, or what does a win look like for your organization as a result of me getting up and speaking for you?
All right.
And
And
they'll
then,
tell you can kind of put that into the proposal and then make sure you're covering their parts. And I love customizing anything that I do for that organization. So even if it's a talk that I've given before, I'll try to put some type of spin on it where they know that this talk is kind of unique for them. I'm hitting their pain points, their benefits, and they like that.
nice. How do you go about finding the actual organizations that you speak to?
Yeah, so there's a few different things you can do. I'm a part of some speakers bureaus, so that helps a little bit. You can also, if you just go to Google and search for a call for speaker in a certain location, you'll see tons of listings. Neil, I also like going on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn, if I do a search for, in quotes, call for speaker, you'll see people who have posted in the past a call for speaker. Now, they may not have anything active. However, you can just go to their profiles and look and say, okay, this person last August, they posted about a call for speaker for their annual event. They're probably going to be doing the same thing again. Reach out to those people in advance, connect with them, let them see what you do, and have an optimized speaker profile. So if they do come to your LinkedIn profile, they can clearly see, hey, he's a speaker. This is what he speaks on. Here's some videos of him speaking. And it's an easy in. It's a great connection for them.
All right. Yeah, that sounds smart. So now you reach out to these organizations to inquire about speaking, and maybe you don't hear back right away. What do you do for follow-up?
Yeah, just make a note. So it's important to have some type of CRM. That's the beauty of, me being an IT geek or whatever, is I understand how to set up technology and set reminders in place for myself. Where I can have a CRM, I can contact the people in the future if I need to. I can say, hey, this conference is always in August every single year. Okay, so maybe I need to reach that person back in February of the next year when they're starting to plan for their conference. And just make a note, put it aside, and then keep going and connecting with people. And I love using LinkedIn. Because at LinkedIn, if I know that a certain company is having an event and where they hire speakers, I can always build a relationship with employees at that organization, like some of the key people, and let them see my posts. I'm adding value to them. And so when my name shows up in the application, it's not a who is this person? It's like, oh, that's Michael. Yeah, I've been seeing all his posts, and yeah, he would be great here.
Nice. You mentioned earlier a CRM. What is a CRM?
Yeah, so CRM and customer relationship management system, but really what it is a way of tracking your contacts, your leads. So it could be in some type of email system, like maybe you've got like a MailChimp or one Constant Contact, some other email system, or you could have a full-blown CRM system like a Salesforce or some of those other programs. But it's just a way of tracking your contacts. I have clients who just use Excel or Google Sheets, and they just have columns set up where they've got everybody listed, their numbers, and they have comments to the side. Whatever's going to be easy for you to quickly be able to access those contact information and reach out to people.
Yeah, for sure. So when it comes to the organizations that you speak for, is it, and you mentioned the call for speakers. So from what I understand with call for speakers, those typically are associations that are putting on events. Is that your major target for the speaking that you do?
No, it could be other organizations too. So sometimes the call for speakers would be for an event. However, some companies They'll do a call for speakers as well because they're having a conference where they need speakers on a monthly basis or just different things. So I love doing different Google searches or different LinkedIn searches to see what's available. And then also, Neil, I love looking at, I love following other speakers to kind of see where they speak. So if I'm following you and I say, hey, well, Neil spoke for ABC Corporation last month, well, they're probably not going to bring him back the next time to speak, so that they're going to be looking for speakers, right? So I can take a look and say, okay, well, you know, if Neil normally charges this amount, then this is probably something I can apply for as well. So that helps too.
That's smart, Michael. And for the people who are listening or watching this conversation, that's definitely something to do. As LinkedIn is your friend when it comes to being a speaker, and then following other speakers, looking in their profile, seeing what they've posted, where they've spoken at, and then going, so now you at least know that place hires speakers. So
Exactly.
it's not something you have to think about because there's a lot of places out there that don't. They may have speakers come in, but they ain't paying nobody.
And by doing that, you also have an idea of their budget too, right? So you say, hey, well, last year at this conference, such and such person spoke. Well, I know that he's in this fee range. Well, okay, well, I can submit in this range as well.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Actually, leads really nicely to my next question is how do you handle the pricing question? You know, you're speaking to the event planner and they say how much do you charge? So what are you saying?
That's always tough. My go-to question is to ask them, hey, I would love to have an idea of what your budget is for speakers. Because my goal, you know, hey, because based on our conversation, because normally pricing comes later. So you've had a good dialogue with them. And I'm saying, hey, based on what you're saying, I feel like I can definitely address the issues that you mentioned. And I would love to come and speak. The date is good for me. Just give me an idea of what your budget range is, and I'd love to see if I can if my talk can fit in your budget. Now, I have had some event planners that just won't tell you. They'll say, yeah, we've got a budget, but we still want to know your numbers first. And that's always tough because I've been in situations before where I know I came in too low and they were looking for a speaker at a higher pay level. And so they're probably like, oh, okay, maybe he's not as good as we thought he was going to be, right? Or you come in high and they're like, oh, our but you know, and they're probably thinking, or oh, our budget is only $2,000, and you know, this brother just said 5,000. Like, oh, we're not gonna be able to get them in, it's not even worth our negotiation. And so that can be a little tough conversation. But I let them know that, hey, I would love to speak for you. I would love to see if we can work within, you know, your budget. If I can get them to really give me some numbers.
Oh man, that is so annoying, Michael. It's like, okay, you know what your budget is, but you're not going to tell me. So I'm going to put out a number that, oh, wait, that's way too much. Well, damn it, why didn't you tell me what your budget was?
Exactly, right? Like give me the opportunity. Like we're having this dialogue, right? Give me the opportunity to at least fit within your budget to say, okay, that's too low for me, or that's too high. And I understand they're trying to like their goal is to pay the least amount for the best speaker, right? And our goal is to make the most, you know, as their speaker. So I understand that the thing there, but it's helpful. So I know one of the platforms I use is eSpeakers, and sometimes if people submit leads looking for speakers, they'll say our budget is this. And I had one recently that I had submitted for. I didn't get this opportunity. But their budget was, I think their budget was $10,000 for a speaker. Or it was either 10 to 15 or something like that, some type of range they had. And so I think I submitted in for like 11 for the range. I didn't get it, but I was like, well, if that's their range, I'm definitely gonna put something in there at that level. And I documented, you know, in hopes that I would get it, but I was like, hey, you just never know. But I was thankful that they at least had a budget that I could put something in. Because it can be tough. Because I know I've had situations. I had one situation, it was a local opportunity here in Ohio where I would have loved to have spoken for that company. It was one of them things, Neil, well, I would have done it for free. But they asked me to, you know, they were like, hey, we know we're looking to hire a speaker in to come do this training. And I gave them a number. And I could tell that the person that my number was higher than what they were looking to do. And the conversation just kind of ended there. And I was like, man, and I was like, I would have done this for free just to get their seal to say I spoke at this company.
Yeah, that's so annoying. That's so unfortunate when it happens, when, you know, you have a number, they have a number, the numbers don't match up. And then what? I mean, oftentimes people will say, well, that's when a negotiation starts, but not always, not if your number
is sometimes they won't let you, right?
Because
like, they're like price shopping, kind of like we do on Amazon, right? When you sort it by like lowest to highest.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, certainly there are people that price or look for speakers that way. When it comes, I mean, you mentioned that the proposal that you send in. How do you determine what goes into a proposal?
Yeah, so I have templates that I use. So I have a lot of it is standard for like all pretty much all clients. So kind of like what my expectations, kind of like what the audience is going to get out of it and all that. But the first part of it is for me is really showing that I listen to them during the call and that I understand the problem that they want me to address as a speaker. So that's key. So really the first part of the proposal is all about them and their problem and kind of how I can address it in my, you know, 50 minute or 90 minute keynote or whatever it is, how I can address that and kind of what the audience is going to take away from it. Then towards the end of my proposals, of course, I'll have like pricing on there and I'll have information about a little bit of information about me, like kind of who I am. But that's towards the end of the proposal.
For the speaking engagements that you don't get, do you have any sort of process for keeping in touch with those people in the event that maybe, you know, you weren't the choice this time around, but maybe you can be the choice next time?
No, I don't have a formal process for that. That's a great idea. I probably need to put something like that in place. I mean, I do have a list of the people where I could get in contact with them again. But some of them, you don't hear back. And some, if I don't have a, like if I actually submitted an application for, you may or may not hear, it's kind of like a job, right? So you may or may not hear back. And so you may not have an opportunity to ask that person, hey, is there any reason why you didn't choose me? Is there anything I could have done better? Like, it would be great if you could have those conversations. But, you know, like if you ever apply for a job, you know how it is. Like you're applying for a job, they may or may not, you know, they may look at your resume. They may or may not give you any dialogue back. And that's going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there are a number of speaking programs out there for people who want to become speakers. You know, they you can pay money and they'll help you in maybe developing your business. Maybe they'll help you developing whatever your signature talk is going to be. Do you have any insight into any of those types of programs and the usefulness of them?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot out there. So one that I'll tell you what I use first. So for me, to learn how to speak, I joined Toastmasters back in 2003, overcame our fear of public speaking in Toastmasters. But then from there, I got certified with the John Maxwell team, or Maxwell Leadership now. And they have a process in place of teaching people the thought process of going from free to fee. So that's been very valuable to me, understanding that process. But then in addition to that, I'm also working with Joseph McClendon in Neuroencoding. And so he has a process in place as well of helping people understand the business of speaking. So that can be helpful. But then you have other organizations like NSA. So I'm a part of NSA Ohio here. And so NSA have models in place where you can learn the business of speaking. So maybe you're not necessarily looking to improve your speaking skills. I mean, they have courses for that as well. But if you're really just looking to understand the business speaking, they can help with that. And then there's another company who I follow. I've never worked with them directly. I read the book and follow some of their content. Speaker Lab, Grant Baldwin. He runs Speaker Lab. His book is excellent. His speak framework is very good. I recommend that to a lot of people just to go through because it helps you really get clearer on what is your message? Who is it for? Type of thing. And that helps out a whole lot. But it's important to understand the business of being a speaker. Mm-hmm. And you'll start learning, okay, speaking is just one way as a speaker that I can make money. But if I can also do like the back of the room sales type of thing. So if I've got my books and I've got courses and things, Because at the end of the day, when I speak somewhere, I'm giving them partial information. There's still more to it, right? There's a whole process in place. And so if I have that set up, then I can always direct them back to my mailing list so they can learn about my courses or other offerings that I do.
For sure. When it comes to those types of speaker programs, people may go into them for various reasons, but ultimately, I suspect it is to become the speaker they want to be and to build out a speaker business. But for those who are thinking about investing in a speaker program, what do you think are reasonable expectations they should have from making that investment?
Yeah, I think between 3 and $10,000 is going to be your type of investment you're going to make in a quality, how to get speaking opportunities type of business. So that could either be like the NSA, the speaker labs, the different certification programs, right? They're all going to be in that within that price range, that $3 to $10,000 price range. And I'll say if you're gonna do it, go in with the expectation of, okay, I'm gonna follow what they suggest that I do to a T, right? I'm gonna trust them. I'm making this investment in myself because I truly believe that I want to be a speaker, so I'm gonna do what they suggest and do it.
Absolutely.
I'm big on that, right? Being a doer, right? Just take action, let's make it happen.
Yep, 100%, Michael. There are people likely listening or watching this conversation, and they have jobs, and they're thinking maybe this speaking thing is something that I can do while keeping my full-time job. How do you go about balancing building out a speaker business while also having a job?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's lots of opportunities for you. So if you're working, let's say you're working a traditional 8 to 5, 9 to 5 type of job, then keep in mind, hopefully you have some vacation time that you can use for your speaking engagements. Also, nowadays, because of COVID, a lot of people, organizations recognize virtual speaking. So before, like virtual speaking really wasn't heard of for like true speaker, like it really wasn't true speaking. But now you can literally give a keynote virtually, get paid for it from the comfort of your home. So maybe you're taking, an hour or two from your work day, vacation time, PTO, or whatever, and delivering that keynote, and then you can get back and do your work. So there's some flexibility there. Also, because of virtual, you can literally speak all around the world. So maybe when it's evening here in Ohio, Eastern time zone, it's morning across, over in Australia or somewhere else where I can literally speak all around the world and be an international speaker speaking from the comfort of my home. So there's lots of opportunity. I think it just comes down to having clear goals. So I can say, okay, if I only have 2 hours that I can devote to my speaking business, what are income producing actions that I can take to move myself? So that may be networking. It may be, calling up some people saying, hey, I would love to come in your organization, do a free lunch and learn for you. Or I'd love to come speak for your company, right? Just blocking up that time and being intentional about it.
That's excellent advice, Michael. Yeah, for the in-person ones, hopefully you got that vacation time, and then for the virtual ones, especially if you're a remote worker, you could work those engagements around your schedule. And if you have to go into an office, I don't know, but boss walks in, is like, what you doing? I'm like,
Wrong lunch.
I'm talking
Yeah, I'm having a
to
meeting, right?
people. Meaning you were not aware
Yeah.
of. This is great. But you mentioned that the majority of the work that you do is training as opposed to keynote. Is there a reason that you decided to focus on training as opposed to keynotes?
No, I really got my start with training. So I started when I, my early days in Toastmasters, I started once I overcame my fear of public speaking, I started doing 45-minute trainings inside Toastmasters, either on public speaking skills or other things. And then in the corporate arena, I started doing D&I training. And so we were doing 4-hour sessions in-person D&I training. And so that's where I really started honing my training skills, my facilitation skills, and I enjoyed it. And so now I love doing that because even in the virtual environment, I just started. So I'm doing, working on right now, a 6-week men's leadership academy that we're doing. It's all virtual, got people all over the world, and it's just great virtual training that, I can get paid from the comfort of my home, educating other people virtually. So that's why I love the group training.
I like the fact that you do training too. I've been thinking about keynotes, Michael. Keynotes are typically between 30 and 90 minutes, just depending on the organization, the association. And I often wonder the usefulness of them. I've been in situations where I've been sitting listening to keynotes and thinking to myself, what am I going to have for lunch?
Yeah.
I'm just like, I don't care about this at all. But when it comes to the training, there's actual, usually there's some sort of activities to
do this. Yeah.
Some thought you have to put into it. So you're actually thinking about the whatever the person who's doing the training is saying, as opposed to listening to some person on a stage for
that you may never
60
hear
minutes.
Again.
Well, that, and then it might even be a topic that you don't care about too. It's just like, wow.
Yeah.
I do not care about this at all. I hope this person make them really, really good money.
Hey, been in IT, I've been on the end of that for sure, right? You've been in some car like I need to know this information with this. Whew. Which is why it's good you teach the geeks, right? So it's like, it's because there's so many IT professionals, engineers who can't communicate effectively to those non-technical people. They're using too much jargon, they're struggling, PowerPoints with like 1,000 words on it and
1,000 words and they reading every one. It's like, okay, yep. Exactly. Yep. I know he can read. That's really good. That's
exactly.
Good to know.
They turn the back, they're like, okay, yeah, it's this.
I wonder what this guy's face looks like.
Send it to me an email.
For real though. It's like, this could really could have been an email, man. I could read too.
Yeah.
I could read maybe even quicker than you. Who knows, This has been great, Michael. Thank you so much for being a guest. So for the last question, for the people who are really thinking about maybe this is something they want to give a go at being a speaker, what, I guess, parting words of wisdom can you offer to them?
Yeah, so when I'll say do it, right? Go out there and speak. So even if you're speaking for free, there's nothing wrong with that. Get out there and speak as much as you can. So one of my mentors a long time ago, she said, Michael, take advantage of every opportunity to speak. And Neil, I do that. Whether it's a podcast show like this, whether it's going to do a lunch and learn somewhere, a keynote speaking or training, I'm constantly speaking, constantly working on that muscle. Because you have to get comfortable with it, get good at it. And the way we're in right now, you could use a free Zoom account and you could record yourself, or you just use your phone, record yourself and speak. You can practice over and over and over. It's like it, right? It's so much easier today. It's not like it was years ago. Anybody could, you can get up and speak, and you can start a YouTube channel for free if you want to get a message out. I mean, it's the time is now. Anybody who wants it can get it.
100%. Well, thanks again for being a guest. Here's the last question. How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I'm easily accessible at michaelpopetraining.com, and I'm known as the Coach's Tech Guy. I can also be found on all social media platforms as Michael J. Pope Jr.
Excellent. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, Michael. Yes.
Thank you.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms, or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.